This is Art and Inspiration with William Rock.
William Rock is a painter and sculptor, as well as the founder of Art and Inspiration. William Rock has had the opportunity to study as well as teach with Tibetan Chinese and Western monastics, artists, writers, and poets of the various spiritual, artistic, and philosophical discipline. His art has been exhibited internationally.
The following is from a talk given at the Ono Ling Center for Meditation and Compassionate Outreach in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Here is William Rock on Art and Inspiration.
Okay, tonight I thought I'd talk about art and inspiration. And inspiration, the word derives from the Latin is spiritus or spirit. And from the Greek, it's breath, or to breathe, or to give life. So as artists, I mean, I think one of the most difficult things that you can do in terms of your work is to try to give it life. But somehow when we encounter work, we're aware that it has that. It has something other. I have some clips from Joseph Campbell and Alan Watts that I'll play along with this, where some of these areas are addressed. And an aspect of it is that the artist is going to the same mystical states that the mystic is in, like that we as artists have access to these states. And I think in Eastern tradition, there's an availability in order to process what that experience that artists have. And I think that's why a lot of artists are drawn to Eastern practices. And I think in terms of meditation, when you realize that through meditation that you're accessing this same state that you do when you make art, or that same experiential of being absorbed or immersed. And then not only that, but that state is here all the time. But we're distracted because we carry around our self-identity, you know, and we have this narration in our head of what we're conditioned to think what life is. And so we measure everything against that. So it's a way of, like, you have to break that narration and self-narration and transcend the self. I spent 5 years doing art in terms of, I call art in the transcendent self, and going beyond that limitation through art and through life itself. So everyone has a narration they're carrying around in their head, what they think life is, and then they measure whatever experiential they have in that filing system and filed away. But can you let go of that file and just be open? And in that openness, and that's what they say is in the moment, all possibility is available in that moment. So that's the design of the practice. And when, like now, meditate or distraction, when the mind is just in the moment, it doesn't get distracted. You see, it doesn't go. So it stays present and aware. It accepts everything as it presents itself. So the design is to have that experience through meditation, and then to be able to take it beyond meditation into life itself. So as an artist, when they master a certain technique and there's no more thought about technique, you can just be in front of your canvas or your clay, or if you're a chef and you're cooking, and there's no thinking about it anymore because you have that. And there's a confidence that's created. And so then that's where this portal or access to inspiration or the divine opens up. And it's beyond thought. It's beyond a conceptual thought. Although thought forms a framework around the creative process itself. Like you can go to it for reference, but it's not dictating what you're creating. So it's transcended thought in that way. There's no sense of time anymore, like time goes by. I mean, we've had that experience, like doing things that we love. You know, what is that? So these are the questions that we have to begin with to ask ourselves, who am I? And that's what Alan Watts talks about in this first short clip.
I believe that if we are honest with ourselves, that the most fascinating problem in the world is, who am I? What do you mean? What do you feel when you say the word I? I myself. I don't think there can be any more fascinating the problem of who we are. Most of us feel I, ego, myself, my source of consciousness, to be a center of awareness and of a source of action that resides in the middle of a bag of skin. And so we have what I have called the conception of ourselves as a skin-encapsulated ego.
So that's one of his very famous lines about that we think of ourselves as like, this is it. That misidentification with the body and the conceptual is the egoic, you know, and that's our contracted self that's been conditioned, and you're called a name and you respond to it. But I'm talking about something that's beyond that and is beyond language. So we have to use language right now in trying to communicate what it is. But in terms of like even religion or belief systems, religio, the root of the word to link back to the mystical origins of all the belief systems. And that's where the commonality is in the human experience. But as it's processed, and I'm trying to, or someone that was the mystic trying to explain these experiences to people that haven't had these experiences with language, it's limited. So if you're a fisherman, I'm going to talk in terms of nets. So if, you know, I'm a Tibetan belief system, I'll talk in terms of mountains or the Himalayas. So as it's processed through people, you know, the original mystical experience gets diluted and belief systems get politicized and this kind of thing. So what I'm trying to say is that artists and every one of us has access to this state, the mystical beyond the rational. But in our culture, maybe in the West, we're not able to process it and to dialogue it and value it, let alone cultivate it. So I think with Eastern belief systems, it gives us room to practice. These practices are designed for you to have that experience. That's what ritual is, through repetition or through chanting. This is designed to induce a trance-like state, that same state that I said that maybe the artist is in terms of beyond thought. It's just like being, you know, that we created conditions that allow that to happen. So it's designed for you to have that experiential. And then it's like, how do you, if you live and you stabilize that experience, and then you live your life from that perspective, and if you had to use words to describe what that state is, would be like a compassionate state that feels connected and empathetic to everyone and everything. So that's how you would describe that state. Emptiness is connectedness. You know, it means connected. It's all connected. There is no individual. That's where the delusion is to think that there is that separateness. But we have to use that in society in order to engage each other. I can't say, hey, we did good today. I have to say, you know, I did and you did, like that sense of being separate. And then out of the separateness is what can cause conflict when we think there's difference, like that you're different, this country's different, you know, they're that. And then that can breed like a conflictual kind of understanding. But in terms of the artist and the mystic going to the same places, and this is where Joseph Campbell talks about that.
And in talking about art one day, Jean led a very, I think, important statement just fall, by the way. She said, you know, the way of the mystic and the way of the artist are very much alike, except that the mystic does not have a craft. The craft holds the artist to the world, and the mystic goes off through his psyche into the transcendent. You might say that's all right for the mystic, but not for anybody else. And the artist is going to many of the same places, but he's held to the world.
So then that experience of the artist and the mystic and the meditator. I mean, when you're in a meditative state, it's also being accessed. If people that have stabilized this experiential, it's always there in every life's experience in the moment and how it presents itself. So as an artist, let's say you're a painter and you have a blank canvas and you just kind of meet it openly and you have your conceptual framework and then you move into it. And then whatever you encounter, you work with and you allow. Once you know technique, you don't have to think about that or imposing technique on it. And it seems to just happen by itself. And it's the same in music and playing, where it seems like there's something greater dictating what you're creating. So then it's about living life from that perspective and being in touch with something greater again than a limited self. So that's what this is all about and what artists access. So Watts dialogues in terms of the Chinese experiential of creating art and spontaneity. And I've done work with the Chinese poet Wang Xiang, master poet and calligrapher, Nobel Prize nominated. And so when I understood this state as an artist, that state of like oneness, like beyond judgment, and realized creating with him that he knew this territory. And even though we don't speak the same language, we could both enter into this state and trust it. So it has to do with a lot of trust to just default to that, you know, in terms of how you create and how you live your life. And it comes from inward. That kind of just being able to meet openly and then just to allow what happens. And whatever you encounter, there's no mistake. There's no idea of a mistake. It's just a movement. Like with painting, you might spend a lot of time creating a layer that you end up covering over, but it's not a mistake. It still contributes to the overall work. And then you get to a point where you feel that creation and destruction is the same movement. If you really watch your mind, there's no attachment that it has to be this way. Like whatever happens in terms of the process is okay. And you just keep moving. And the most important thing is to honor the work, the creativity, the art in your life. And it's just that is honored. It doesn't have to be sold. Other people don't have to like it, but it has to do with your own inner development. And once there's that realization that that teacher is in you, then there's a freedom to allow that just to be, that it is coming from within. I think the same thing, like we talked about here, like how did we generate like meditation? There's ritual involved. And I think artists create a ritual around the way they do their work, whether it's making sure they're not going to be disturbed or things are where they, you know, want them to be. It could be look like a big mess to other people, but the artist knows where everything is. So it's like, you know, I like to challenge the senses in different ways. So I would listen maybe to music I haven't heard of before, like Aboriginal stuff or light incense, that different smell to challenge that, to be open. So you're not going in with that it has to be a certain way, that there's a standard. It's just allowing yourself to be. But this is after technique is learned and mastered to an extent where there's no thinking about that. Because once you enter the conceptual, it can break you out of that flow. I think artists create their own rituals and they determine, you know, what that is in order to get to that state. It's part of the conditions they have to create. I think intuition, I think flow is more the, you know, if you're describing the state of it, but I think to intuit is to, you know, maybe it's not an explainable reasonable, but there's just an overwhelming type of feeling that there's a certain truth in what's being presented. In terms of these states, I think vision states, psychic states, all this can be entered into this. And we were talking earlier about people that are branded mentally ill that could be, you know, just because they can't function in society and go back and forth, they could be trapped in certain mystical states that society hasn't deemed valuable. And artists can have these insights and go in these states, but if we can navigate back and then I can play along in society, then it's okay. But I've met people with autism that have tremendous insight and can really dialogue, but it's dismissed because they've been branded with this label by society, and that's not held as being valuable, or they're not able to do this to make so much an hour, and that's what we value. So again, we're limited by the conditions that our society imposes. If you went out and talked about people about experience you just had today, meditating and being, and you know, and first thing that gets labeled is, oh, well, that sounds crazy. That's what like keeps you in the herd, because you're going to be labeled. And if you're not running with everybody else, then you're going to be ostracized. And we're taught from an early age that you want to belong and play with everybody else. So you have to be willing to step out of the stream to see how it moves. And then once you see how it moves, then you can go back in and navigate it and even help direct it that way. But you have an overall picture of it. But you have to be able to step away, and that's where solitude is so valuable, to get away from it all, or to get into nature, and then you gain an insight on how the overall works. And then you can go back into it, and then there's a different perspective on it. And if you're coming with the right intention, then you can help guide it. And that's where patience and humility and all the practices come into play in a practical way. Yeah, I think that is the terms of myth. That's the hero. And usually the hero can be, you know, you see it in films where the hero's wounded, but still journeys on, and we always like respond to the wounded hero, and that's the risk. I mean, you have to take, there's a risk involved, but even at the level in physics and quantum physics, risk is favored, even at the electron level, that if you're favored if you take the risk. And what's risk is really a fear that you're venturing outside your conditioned, contracted eye, your system. And so part of that condition to keep you contained is a fear, like, don't do that. So when we start to venture out of it, fear kicks in and tries to push us back. So to be aware of the fear, you're already outside of it. You're not just carried by it. So awareness alters the experience itself of what fear is, to be aware that your system is afraid. And what's it afraid of? It's afraid of ostracism or death, I guess, is our biggest fear. So if we examine that and what that is, and there's practices that do that, and you really go into it, is it possible to get beyond fear, and how much does fear contain us? So, I mean, these are questions that, like, people can ask themselves, but that's fear. It's overcoming fear, or going beyond it, I think. Yeah, I think that patience is a big part of it. Again, society dictates you want this, and how do you get it now? And we're talking, it might take years, but you have to remain open to the possibility. And just because it doesn't happen 2 days from now, it doesn't mean it's not going to happen. But then when it presents itself, there's a readiness, and it's willing to engage. When I started sculpting, like, Eastern sculpture in my basement 14 years ago, I don't know why, but I trusted it intuitively to do it, doing, like, Buddhist art and sculpture. And then I'm looking, 14 years later, I have Tibetan Rinpoches and Lamas in my basement looking at what I'm doing. And I realize the continuum. You know, I don't know how it's going to happen, but I know the overriding intuitive is telling me to do that and to trust that no matter what externally presents itself. And it can be relationships or whatever else that try to pull you away from it. And you have to, it's like being on like an inner fire, in a sense, that there's no turning back when this starts to kind of open up. And it's really a great thing, but it's not initially valued in our culture in terms of creative people. It's how do you put the fire out? And people that do, and a lot of people at a young age that it's put out, you carry that your whole life, and it can poison from within if it's not given an outlet. And it's never too late to reconnect with that part of our being that wants to express. However it comes out of your being is valid. And then you have to determine the movement of it. You're steering. No teacher, whatever, any great teacher is going to point you back to you. And then that's all coming from you. And then it's like you don't even have to explain it rationally as it unfolds. You might find reference in another culture that validates what you're doing, but eventually you just follow the intuitive. You don't need that external validation at all. And you don't even have to tell people about it anymore. What I'm saying now, I understood 15 years ago, but there was nobody to tell, and that was okay. So you have to let all that go and see if that comes back and it asks you to speak about it. And there are great teachers, and I feel in the Tibetan traditions and many traditions. And like I said, the ritual is designed for you to have this experience. I think the collective unconscious becomes available, but you know what I'm talking about, like, transcends that. But that might present itself, and you realize that those are stages along the way, and that you can engage it. And as artists, you know, I have visions that maybe when I had them and wasn't prepared, and you associate fear with them, and they dissipate. But once you come to terms, you find that maybe they even stay longer. I'm talking about visually that will stay, and there's some wisdom imparted there. So when I work on the Yeshiwama sculpture, I mean, I had visions of it a lot, but it was somehow informing me or encouraging me along the way. It's nothing spooky or whatever. I get it. You know, we're in communication with all that, but there's something in the brain that filters it out, and just kind of even naturally sometimes it just leaks through. Or maybe people that are considered mentally ill, there's a bigger opening where all this input is coming in, and they can't process it, let alone like try to stabilize it. But then we're always like so enamored when they have this wisdom, or they can do like some really great stuff. So it's in all of us. You know, it's all the same. You know, it's all coming from the same ground. And then it's just like flowering differently through each one of us. So there's that uniqueness, but at the ground of it, it's the same. I think everyone is an artist, and I don't even know that it takes some talent. I think we're all artists, and everything is art in the purest sense. But the way that I talk about it, I use it as a flag just to engage. But yeah, you could take it integrally to any point, a chef or, you know, even someone just at home, you know, making something that loves doing it, is immersed in it. I mean, it's all creative movement. There's no like that this has more value than that. I mean, we might assign it that way as a society, but we're all creative beings. And it's up to you. Is this a genuine expression with what you have, that you're following this and that you realize it's something that's continually unfolding? And if it doesn't process fully, maybe in this form, in this lifetime, that there's things that need resolved or unresolved energy, that it can come back again in order to try to resolve that, or things that it's attached to. It's just like Campbell said, in terms of consciousness running through everything. And he said, look at a tree, you know, how its branches turn to the sun. Or in a rock, if you look at an electron microscope, there's movement. Everything is just energy and movement. And that's what we are. And it's a good thing. It's not a nihilistic thing. And as Watts said, you know, we didn't come into this world, we came out of it. So we came out of it organically. So it's not like, okay, ship landed, let's let these, people off. So even like that shift in perception or conceptual can create a little room around who you are and the way you perceive things. And that's what meditation does. It takes you beyond thought. And that's the practice. It's always a practice. So by practicing, you create more space inwardly to engage things that you wouldn't have engaged before. You would have judged it and pushed it away, filed it away. I'm not going to listen to this teacher. Look how he's dressed in these robes. Okay, goodbye. So that you have to get past all that. And that's where you need the humility, patience, and all that good stuff that's taught. Those are techniques. Mastery level is a different thing. And then transcendent level goes beyond mastery level. It's something else. It's, mastery, I think, is like hitting a target that everyone can see. And genius is hitting a target that no one knows is there. So that's the difference. It's all subtle. As you evolve, as a chef, it's constantly evolving. And there's real subtle things that just give you a whole new shift of insight. And it's the same with like art. It just can be one little thing, suddenly opens up a whole new way of possibility. And we never have it. When we think we got it, we don't have it. It's just always just being, and it's always just moving, like kind of life itself. And that never goes away. That's what the eternal pulse is. That spark is always there. We only think conceptually there's a beginning and an end to it when there isn't. So talking like primordial awareness with practice, get the techniques. That's what it's about, is to bring that out into the world and into life. Get you out of the way. You have to get out of the way. It flowers from there. And that's the hard part, because that's just like death. That's what death is. So there's a mourning of the self, and we don't want to let go of that. And we're going to have to one day anyway. Why not do it now and then live life from that perspective? The chanting, although the sounds themselves conjure up, that state maybe more readily, that repetition is designed to get you into a trance-like mystical state. That's what it is. It's through the repetition. The not thinking anymore, or learning how to cook over and over till there's no thinking anymore. And then you're just present with it, and it's like everything is available in that possibility. And that's where like great stuff happens then.
Thank you, Bill. And we'll do the dedication of merit now.
Thanks for listening. I'm William Rock, and this has been Art and Inspiration. Stay creative no matter what.
About these programs, artandinspiration.org.